Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Egypt's Mubarak is given a 3-year sentence for embezzlement, and there are new attacks reported in Nigeria. I'm Frances Alonzo reporting from Washington. A Cairo court has sentenced former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to 3 years in prison for embezzlement. His sons, Ala and Gamal, were given 4-year sentences. The sentences can be appealed. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Former President Mubarak appeared calm as the judge read out his sentence in the case known in the Egyptian press as the Presidential Palace Trial. The ousted leader and his sons were accused of diverting more than $17 million meant for maintenance of presidential palaces to renovate their private residences. His conviction for fraud could be overturned on appeal. The former president was flown back to a military hospital after his sentence was read out. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Suspected Islamist militants have killed nearly 30 people in 2 villages near Chibok. That's the northern Nigerian town where hundreds of schoolgirls were kidnapped last month. Witnesses in Alagarno say gunmen stormed their village overnight Tuesday and killed at least 17 people. They say the attackers also stole food and set homes on fire. Residents in nearby Shawa say gunmen killed at least 10 people during an attack on Monday. Meanwhile, survivors of Tuesday's twin bombings in the city of Jos are telling their stories. The blast in a busy market area killed at least 118 people. The United Nations Security Council has strongly condemned deadly fighting in northern Mali between government forces and separatists. At least 36 people were killed in clashes after troops were sent in to respond to Tuareg rebels who attacked government offices in Kidal last week. The rebels on Monday released over 30 civil servants they had taken hostage during that attack. China and Russia, after a decade of negotiations, have signed a $400 billion natural gas deal. The 30-year deal was approved today in Shanghai. It calls for Russia to send gas from Siberia to pipeline to China. After that pipeline is built, the gas could flow by 2018. Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping watched in a grand hall as energy executives signed the agreement that serves immediate political interests for both countries. Pakistan's army has launched a series of airstrikes against suspected terrorist hideouts in the country's remote northwest and says it's killed at least 60 militants. Sharon Bain reports.
The military said Wednesday that a number of hardcore terrorists, important commanders, and foreign fighters had died in the targeted strikes in North Waziristan, an area rife with militants. One eyewitness to the bombardment, who asked not to be named, said a number of non-combatants had died in the strikes. He says the strikes started at 2 a.m. and then happened again hours later. Many houses of common people were destroyed and a number of people were killed besides the militants. Common people were also affected by the shelling. The military said large caches of arms and ammunition, including material for making homemade bombs or IEDs, had been destroyed in the strikes. Sharon Bain, VOA News, Islamabad.
Police in Tehran have arrested 6 Iranians for posting a dance video featuring American singer Pharrell Williams' hit song Happy on the internet. The clip shows 3 men and 3 unveiled women singing and dancing to the song on rooftops and in the streets. Speaking Tuesday, Tehran's police chief called the dance video a vulgar clip which hurt public chastity. Islamic law enforced in Iran says women must cover themselves from head to toe. The police chief added it took authorities just hours to identify and arrest the dancers. The video was uploaded in April. The original clip has been removed from the internet, but copies are still available. France's National Rail Company has 2,000 new trains for an expanded regional network. Unfortunately, those ultra-fast trains are also ultra-fat. A spokesman for the RFF, that's the National Rail Operator, confirmed the trains are too wide for many station platforms, thus causing costly repairs. The mix-up arose when the RFF transmitted faulty dimensions. I'm Frances Alonzo, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiye Suhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
We can advise and assist Nigerian forces in the search and the rescue of these girls. In this role, U.S. forces expertly trained to deal with hostage situations and in jungle environments and in tracking could help Nigerians with intelligence, planning, and logistics.
That's the chairman of the U.S. House Committee on Foreign Affairs, Ed Royce. He headed a hearing today looking at U.S. government efforts to fight the terrorist group Boko Haram. Details next.
Also in the news, suspected Islamist militants have killed nearly 30 people in two villages near Chibok, the northern Nigerian town where hundreds of schoolgirls were kidnapped last month. And a Cairo court has sentenced former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to 3 years in prison for embezzlement.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, suspected Islamist militants have killed nearly 30 people in two villages near Chibok, the northern Nigerian town where hundreds of schoolgirls were kidnapped last month. Witnesses in Alagarno say gunmen stormed their village overnight and killed at least 17 people. They say the attackers stole food and burned down homes. Residents in nearby Shawa say gunmen killed at least 10 during a Monday attack. Word of the attack surfaced today, a day after two bombings in the central city of Jos killed at least 118 people. The two explosions in Jos occurred just minutes apart in a busy market area. No one has claimed responsibility, but suspicion fell on Boko Haram, the Islamist extremist group blamed for thousands of deaths over the past 5 years. Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan called yesterday's bombings in Jos cruel and evil. Mr. Jonathan said he is fully committed to winning the war on terrorism. The president declared the state of emergency last year and sent thousands of troops to combat the militant group. However, large-scale attacks on schools, markets, military bases, and other targets have continued. Boko Haram kidnapped more than 300 girls from a school in Chibok in mid-April. 276 of those girls remain missing.
Today, members of the U.S. House of Representatives are hearing expert testimony on Boko Haram. Early today, House members met in private with Deborah Peter. She's a 15-year-old schoolgirl who survived last month's mass kidnapping by the group in Chibok in northeastern Nigeria. Later, they heard testimony from U.S. officials over U.S. efforts to find the nearly 300 schoolgirls who are still missing. The chair of the House Foreign Committee on Foreign Affairs, Ed Royce, explained the importance of U.S. support in fighting Boko Haram.
U.S. involvement is critical. U.S. forces are well positioned to advise and assist. We can advise and assist Nigerian forces in the search and the rescue of these girls. In this role, U.S. forces expertly trained to deal with hostage situations and in jungle environments and in tracking could help Nigerians with intelligence, planning, and logistics.
Amanda Dory is the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for African Affairs at the U.S. Department of Defense. She says the DOD is providing support to help Nigeria recover the girls and catalyze other efforts to save civilians from attacks by Boko Haram.
For its part, DOD is supporting the establishment of counter-IED and civil military operations capacity within the Nigerian Army as part of Nigeria's security doctrine. We've also supported the establishment of a national-level intelligence fusion capability to promote better information sharing among the various Nigerian national security entities. Most recently, in late April of this year, we began working with Nigeria's newly created counterterrorism-focused Ranger Battalion. As has been demonstrated recently, Boko Haram uses the lightly controlled borders between Nigeria and its neighbors for cross-border operations. Last week, France hosted a very timely summit at which heads of state from Nigeria, Chad, Cameroon, Benin, Niger, along with the U.S. and U.K., sought to improve regional collaboration. For our part, DOD and the Department of State are working closely together on a proposal to enhance border security along Nigeria's common borders with Chad, Niger, and Cameroon in support of a regional response to counter the threat posed by Boko Haram. The concept is to build border security capacity and promote better cooperation and communication among the security forces of each country with the aim of reducing Boko Haram's operational space and safe havens.
Specifically, Dory says 16 Department of Defense personnel from multiple locations have joined the multidisciplinary team of experts led by the State Department at the U.S. Embassy in Abuja. She says the team works with Nigerian security personnel to identify gaps and shortfalls and provide requested expertise and information, including the use of intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance support. The U.S. is also working closely with the United Kingdom, France, and other international partners to coordinate a multilateral response.
Eleven minutes past the hour, this is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Malawi's election turned violent yesterday. Soldiers were called out to put down riots when voters burned polling stations to protest delayed station openings. Some reports say polling stations opened 10 hours late in some places. Protests continue today as ballots for some stations in the capital, Blantyre, arrived late. Election Chief Maxon Mbendera conceded that the delays have created an embarrassing situation. An estimated 7.4 million Malawians took part in 2 days of voting to choose a president from among 12 candidates. They are also voting for members of the national legislature and local government officials. President Joyce Banda is running for re-election against Peter Mutharika, the brother of her predecessor in the office, and against a former cleric, Lazarus Chakwera. Banda has been celebrated as one of Africa's few female presidents. However, she's trying to weather a $30 million corruption scandal that forced foreign donors to freeze some aid to the country.
A Cairo court has sentenced former Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to 3 years in prison for embezzlement. His sons, Ala and Gamal, were given four-year sentences. The sentences can be appealed. Mubarak has already been in detention for 3 years on various charges. Edward Yeranian reports from Cairo.
Former President Mubarak appeared calm as the judge read out his sentence in the case known in the Egyptian press as the Presidential Palace Trial. The ousted leader and his sons were accused of diverting more than $17 million meant for maintenance of presidential palaces to renovate their private residences. His conviction for fraud could be overturned on appeal. In 2012, Mubarak was given a life sentence for killing protesters during the 2011 revolution that forced him from power, but that conviction was overturned. The case, however, is being retried. The former president was flown back to a military hospital after his sentence was read out. It was not immediately clear if he will be returned to the Toura prison, where he was jailed before his conviction for killing protesters was overturned. The sentences, however, mean that Mubarak and his sons will have to wear the blue prison garb standard in Egypt for those convicted of a crime. Defendants who have not been convicted are allowed to wear white. Some analysts, like political sociologist Saeed Sadiq, think that the Egyptian judiciary did not want to appear soft on Mubarak, especially after it handed down harsh sentences against Muslim Brotherhood members in recent months.
This is an irrevocable verdict, so it would serve the idea that the Egyptian judicial system does not discriminate and is not only targeting the Muslim Brotherhood, but it also takes care of the Mubarak-era people and even the Mubaraks. This is only a sentence in one case, but he is facing several other cases, so this is not the end of his nightmare.
Sadiq believes that the Egyptian judiciary is following a similar strategy to that used in Chile after the rule of former dictator Augusto Pinochet came to an end. Pinochet was accused of killing scores of political opponents after overthrowing President Salvador Allende in 1971, and Chileans sought closure to a painful national nightmare.
In Chile, all they wanted is a historic conviction by the court against Pinochet so that they feel better. And it didn't happen. And I think the Egyptians copied that, but adapted it to the Egyptian case. So you can get a conviction, but the conviction can be overturned, and then you drag the trial for a long period of time until the defendant dies, and then the whole issue is closed.
Former President Mubarak marked his 86th birthday last week, and his supporters brought a cake to his hospital room. The former leader has also given a number of interviews in the Egyptian press in recent weeks, and his various health issues have been the subject of headlines. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Thank you, Edward. Egyptian presidential candidate Hamdine Sabahi is engaged in an uphill battle against frontrunner Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, who polls say has as much as 80% of voter support. Such overwhelming odds have left some wondering what Sabahi is trying to achieve. VOA's Elizabeth Errett has more from Cairo.
In an Egypt dominated by the candidacy of former army chief Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, it's easy to forget there's another candidate in the presidential race. Hamdine Sabahi, opposition politician, Nasserite socialist, and occasional poet, is registering single-digit support. But that hasn't deterred his fans. Third-place finisher in the 2012 presidential vote, Sabahi continues to draw support with his promise of economic justice.
If God is gracious to me through your votes, I vow in front of God and in front of you that not one person in Egypt will sleep hungry or humiliated.
But what sets him apart from most voices in Egypt is his talk of reconciliation. While Sabahi supported the overthrow of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi and a ban on the Muslim Brotherhood, he has held out an olive branch to individuals within the movement.
No one will be able to build Egypt in this environment of extreme polarization and hate speech. Whether it is accusing someone of being an apostate or of treason in the name of religion or nationalism, the country needs to be reunited.
It's a message too soon for many voters. But even some Sisi supporters say Sabahi brings a much-needed sense of legitimacy to a race critics say is one-sided.
There is competition. Hamdine Sabahi is a well-known, respected man, and I can't deny that. I support el-Sisi, but I can't deny that Hamdine Sabahi deserves to run.
Others, noting how other potential candidates bowed out because el-Sisi ran, complain Sabahi's presence gives the election a false legitimacy.
I don't think it is a competition. I think they're just lying to the Egyptian population.
Yet Sabahi dismisses such concerns about his role in the race and, despite his poor showing in the polls, says he is in it to win it. Elizabeth Arrett, VOA News, Cairo.
The International Organization for Migration, IOM, is appealing for $500,000 to help 5,000 Chadian refugees in Cameroon. They were living in the Central African Republic but fled violence there. They became stranded on the Cameroonian side of the CAR-Cameroon border, living out in the open. They are in desperate need of basic resources and psychosocial help. The Chadians are expected to join IOM road convoys to Chad between May 24th and July 16th. The organization says the stranded Chadians ask for help in escaping the desperate living conditions on the border and return back home. IOM Cameroon is working with the Chadian embassy to issue them travel documents. Dr. Kasim Soufi is the chief of mission for IOM in Chad. He explained the dire situation of the Chadians who are stranded on the Cameroon side of the CAR-Cameroon border.
When the situation became so tight for especially Chadian migrants who are in the Central African Republic, everybody, got displaced. There are those who got displaced internally, they moved from point A to point B, and there are those who were close to the borders of neighboring countries who managed to escape. So initially, the government has taken the initiative of evacuating the citizens with the assistance of the international organization. So there are people who got out, who escaped the fighting, the killing from Central African Republic by flights that are organized by the government of Chad and also by the International Organization for Migration. And there are those who have been evacuated via road through the border between Chad and Central Africa, one of the biggest groups at the border areas of Cameroon and Central African Republic, Kenzu and Garoua Bulai, the two places, the two locations. There are more than 5,000, actually, but IOM has already organized 4,200, I think, Chadian migrants to return home.
So how many trucks will be operating in the convoy that will take place May 24th through July 16th?
The average number of a truck actually is between, let's say, 80 to 100%, depending on the truck, but that is the average number. So it means there will be most likely 10 or even 12 convoys that will have to be organized actually during this period, because you cannot carry so many people. Although people have nothing at the moment, they're only people. The roads, you cannot use buses. You have to use these big lorries and with big tires. So that could go the road between the border in Cameroon and Central Africa is horrible, especially now that the rainy season has started. It's very, very complicated. I mean, it's the opposite of the desert, as I remember, when people were coming from Libya. And it was also another challenging, but that one is dry. Now we are in wet season, so is a very, very challenging task. But the main issue that we were trying to raise with our last briefing note, it is not enough just to bring people at the entry point in Chad, for example, in Mundu. The problem is once they arrive there, then you have a lot of issues. And to put them in a transit site, first of all, to register them, to get their details, to profile them, to know where they come from Chad, and also to organize them, to assist them to proceed with their journey to their final destinations or where they want, will wish to go in Chad. Because as Chadian, you cannot be a refugee with your own country. This is the government policy, which is in line also with the International Organization for Migration.
And, of course, we know the basic needs of these people. They're in need of food, water. They've been out in the open for so long. And also, I understand they're in need of psychosocial care as well.
Yeah, I like to compare always Central African crisis with the Libyan crisis. That one was people ran away, they left their things, and they managed to come back home. But here, almost everybody, every family member has seen something that will remain in his. So you see people, their husbands have been killed. You see people, their kids have been killed. But then they got separated. One came through the border with Chad, and one landed in Cameroon, and the other one landed in Congo Brazzaville. And that's not only death and disability, but also separation. You see, among them, there are many what we call unaccompanied and separated minors or children. So it is a very, very huge in terms of psychosocially, actually. Then, appropriate intervention is really needed.
That was Dr. Kasim Soufi, Chief of Mission for IOM in Chad. He spoke with me from Pisa, Italy, where he is attending a conference.
Despite 5.5 million newborn and stillborn baby deaths each year, investment in newborn health remains very low. That's one of the findings in a series of papers published in the medical journal The Lancet. The research also shows the vast majority of those deaths could be prevented. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
Lead researcher Joy Long says the research is the most accurate estimate yet on the number of deaths of newborns and stillbirths.
Every year, there are 2.9 million babies who die in the first month of life, and most shockingly, a million who die on their birthday, the first day. And there are 2.6 million stillbirths, most shockingly, 1.2 million who die while the woman is in labor. So together, this is 5.5 million babies.
Most of the deaths are in low and middle income countries, but rich nations, she says, are not immune. There are about 500,000 preterm births in the United States every year.
The three leading causes around the world are preterm births, birth complications, so where women don't get the right care during labour and babies that are full term can have damage and even die because of lack of care during labour. And then thirdly, infection.
Lawn is a professor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and an advisor to Save the Children UK. She says many babies and their mothers could be saved for just a few dollars worth of medical care.
In this series, we show very clearly that 71% of newborn deaths can be prevented with solutions that we have already, and that together, 3 million women, babies, counting newborns and stillbirths, could be saved every year with investment at the time of birth. So that's a triple return on investment with care at the time of birth.
That care includes simple things like keeping the baby warm, helping it learn to breastfeed, and making sure it has skin-to-skin contact with its mother. Also, Lawn says there are injections that can greatly improve the odds of a baby's survival. One injection prevents tetanus infections, a nearly always fatal condition for babies. Another contains corticosteroids and is given to women in preterm labor. Corticosteroids affect stress and immune response and inflammation. They help premature babies improve their breathing. This is standard treatment in rich nations, but not in developing countries. It costs less than a dollar. Lawn says it's been known for many years that a large number of newborns die, yet funding to prevent the problem remains low.
Of the billions of dollars that are given for child survival, only 4% of that donor funding even mentions the word newborn. And yet 44% of under five deaths are among newborns. So there's a major mismatch in what the funding is going to compared to where the deaths are now.
Much of the funding goes towards preventing deaths of mothers and children up to age five. In recent years, it's become more common in the U.S. to issue birth certificates for stillborn babies. Lawn says it means a lot to parents to know that their child has been recognized. However, what the papers in The Lancet also show is that in many developing countries, no record is kept.
A woman who loses a newborn death or a stillbirth in many of the places I've worked in Africa, there will be no piece of paper. The baby may not be named. It's very unlikely there will be any funeral or public recognition. And those things aren't just sad for the woman, but they hide the whole problem. The fact that in this day and age you can have 5.5 million babies entering and leaving the planet without official records, but also mostly without funerals or recognitions, actually stops us acting.
More than 50 experts from 28 institutions in 17 countries took part in the Lancet series. In June, a new international initiative is set to be launched called Every Newborn Action Plan. It's described as an evidence-based roadmap toward care for every woman and a healthy start for every newborn baby. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on The Voice of America.